You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the earth. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, April 11th, 2018, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the program, everyone. So glad you all could join us. And a special shout out goes to Margaret in New Jersey, who called Delta 9 House today and told us she heard about Delta 9 on a podcast. Turns out it was this podcast. So thank you, Margaret, for calling in, and thank you for continuing to listen. We've got a lot of news to cover on today's show, plus a whole lot of audio, so let's jump right into it. The big news, of course, today is that Speaker of the House, former Speaker of the House, John Boehner, has announced that he's joined the board of a major cannabis business. We're going to be talking about that today in the Radical Rant, where I go off on the concept of cannabis carpetbaggers, the people who were all for locking us up until it became legal to make money off of our purchases. We'll talk about that and how the cannabis community is somewhat divided as to whether or not we should welcome these folks with open arms, not just here in the United States, but also in Canada. So we've got that story coming up at the end of our first hour. Also on the program today, we are going to take a look at the gubernatorial candidacy of Cynthia Nixon, the former co-star of Sex and the City. She's running in the Democratic primary for governor of New York. She came out with a full-throated endorsement of marijuana legalization as a racial justice issue. We got the audio for that. Plus, we're going to take a look in our Government at Work segment on other Democrats lacking a spine on this issue, still calling for more studies, more research, and a wait-and-see approach toward Colorado and Washington. Don't know what they're waiting for, folks. We'll take a look at that coming up in Government and at Work. Also, we'll have time for a What in the News segment. Donald Trump has talked a lot about the opioid crisis and our need to find a non-addictive painkiller to replace opioids. What do you know? I've got some on me right here. So we'll talk about that in What in the News, plus a couple of new studies that bolster our point about cannabis being the exit drug, I'm saying, from the problem of opiate addiction. All that coming up on the show. Lots of audio, plus hour two. But first, let's get to the news.
This is your cannabis headline news. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for the week of Wednesday, April 11th, 2018. I'm Russ Belville. Former Speaker of the House John Boehner has joined the board of a major cannabis business, saying his views on the matter have, quote, evolved. Boehner, who was Speaker from 2011 to 2015, presided over the House while over 420,000 Americans were arrested for marijuana crimes. Quote, I'm convinced descheduling of the drug is needed, wrote Boehner on Twitter, continuing, so we can do research, help our veterans, and reverse the opioid epidemic ravaging our communities, end quote. In 2011, however, Boehner said he was, quote, unalterably opposed to the legalization of marijuana, telling a constituent he opposed then-Congressman Barney Frank's bill to deschedule marijuana because, quote, legalization will result in increased abuse of all varieties of drugs, including alcohol, end quote. New York gubernatorial candidate Cynthia Nixon has strongly endorsed the legalization of marijuana. Taking to Twitter to air a short video, the actress, who co-starred in Sex and the City, framed marijuana legalization as a racial justice issue.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Nixon. A lot of you have been asking about my position on marijuana, so here it is. A lot of you have been asking about my position on marijuana, so here it is. I believe it's time for New York.
My apologies, that clip is not playing properly. Nixon is running in the Democratic primary against incumbent Governor Andrew Cuomo, who has referred to marijuana as, quote, a gateway drug and currently favors only studying marijuana legalization. A Florida man has won the right to cultivate his own cannabis for medical purposes. The man, Joe Redner, is a 77-year-old stage 4 lung cancer survivor. Redner and other critics say that the Florida Department of Health has failed in its duty to provide reasonable access to cannabis as medicine, violating his rights under the Florida Constitution. Leon County Circuit Judge Karen Gevers agreed, finding, quote, that the Florida Department of Health has been and continues to be noncompliant with the Florida constitutional requirements, end quote. The ruling applies only to Redner, however, meaning that over 95,000 registered patients in Florida are still banned from home growing their own medicine. The Mormon Church has officially come out against a proposed ballot initiative for 2018 to legalize medical marijuana in Utah. The First Presidency of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints writes, quote, "The public interest is best served when all new drugs designed to relieve suffering and illness and the procedures by which they are made available to the public undergo the scrutiny of medical scientists and official approval bodies," end quote. 3 in 5 Utahns are counted as members of the LDS Church. 2 in 5 are active members. However, a February poll shows 77% of Utah voters favor medical cannabis, up from 69% a year before. The initiative is just 1,000 signatures short of qualifying for the November election. The Peoria, Illinois area has become the epicenter of a deadly outbreak of synthetic cannabinoids tainted with rat poison. 69 people have reportedly been made sick, including internal bleeding, in the counties of Peoria, Tazewell, and Woodford. Another 38 cases have been reported in Chicago and Cook County. 3 people have died so far from ingesting the poison. The product is made from highly potent synthetic molecules that hyperstimulate the endocannabinoid system, intended for research labs only and not for human consumption. The product is sometimes called synthetic marijuana and is sold under brands like K2 and Spice. The Maine Senate on Wednesday approved a bill that would eventually allow legal marijuana sales in the state, setting the stage for lawmakers to have enough support to avert a potential veto by Republican Governor Paul LePage. The Senate-backed new compromise legislation 24-10. Republican Senator Roger Katz said the bill would allow municipalities to opt in and allow pot sales while providing some tax revenues for law enforcement and public awareness campaigns. Some pro-marijuana activists also didn't like it that it would cut the number of plants a person can grow for personal use from 6 to 3. They also voiced concerns about the revised tax structure and the ban on marijuana social clubs, which the Maine initiative approved by voters explicitly authorized. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for the week of Wednesday, April 11th, 2018. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. The Marijuana Agenda free podcast is available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, SoundCloud, and on our Facebook page at MJ Agenda. Free video archives are available at the Radical Russ channel on YouTube. Help keep this media free by making a donation at paypal.me/RadicalRuss. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. This year in the United States, the opioid overdose crisis will take over 60,000 American lives. The use and abuse of alcohol will claim over 90,000 American lives. But the government still wants to crack down on Americans who smoke marijuana, which has never killed anybody. If this were a war and the enemy killed 150,000 Americans, would we go invade some country that had nothing to do with it? Wait, don't answer that. Skip that.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
People say no to drugs. It's really, really easy.
Adding more gasoline to the fire.
Lackadaisical.
Really tough, really big, really great.
To infect and rot our nation.
Dangerous gateway drug.
We don't need to be legalizing marijuana.
To build and grow a stronger, healthier, and drug-free society.
Today in What in the News, we're taking a look at the opioid overdose crisis happening in this country, where we have an estimated 60,000 people who have died of overdoses last year, more than died in the entire Vietnam War. And now, for U.S. adults, I believe it has surpassed car wrecks as the leading accidental cause of death. So this is a huge, huge issue across the country, and a number of politicians have been weighing in on this issue with various ideas about how to deal with it. Rarely do they talk about the opioid manufacturers who had a big hand in this. We've seen Insys Therapeutics founder and some of the CEOs and executives, five of them, I believe, who had been charged with bribery and kickbacks, getting doctors, coercing these doctors to write prescriptions for their fentanyl-based spray off-label. Basically, it was made for cancer patients, and they were writing it for just regular old pain patients. This pharmaceuticalization for profit, the profit motive that is getting so many of these companies to get the DEA to kick up the opioid production quotas. They've been allowing massive increases in the production of these opioids year after year after year. And one person who's been demagoguing on the issue, as he does just about every issue, is the current president of the United States, Donald Trump, who says that one of the keys we must examine in order to get through this opiate overdose crisis is trying to find some alternative for these people in massive pain.
That includes increasing federal funding for the development of non-addictive painkillers. And we have to come up with a solution where we come up with a painkiller that's not so addictive.
A painkiller that's not so addictive. If only we could think of something. If only our scientists could get to work on this. And we really need to work hard on this.
I will be pushing the concept of non-addictive painkillers very, very hard. We have to come up with that solution.
We have the solution for you. It's called cannabis. It's called medical marijuana, ganja, pot, weed, reefer, muggles, gauge, jive, tea, herb. Whatever you call it, by any other name, it would heal just as well. This concern about the opioid overdose crisis, without a concomitant commitment to legalization of marijuana, is not just flying in the face of anecdotes of numerous people we know who have managed to kick deadly addictions thanks to their use of marijuana. It flies in the face now of established science. Just last week, the American Medical Association reported a couple of studies, two separate studies, showing that access to marijuana, legal marijuana, reduces the reliance on these opioid painkillers. One study, it was conducted by researchers at the University of Georgia in Athens, says, quote, "Medical cannabis laws are associated with significant reductions in opioid prescribing in the Medicare Part D population. This finding was particularly strong in states that permit dispensaries and for reductions in hydrocodone and morphine prescriptions," end quote. And so what they're pointing out there, it's not just the medical marijuana law. It's not just having the ability to grow your own cannabis. It's retail commercial access, the ability to go buy some, the ability to walk into a store and get some herb. Significant reductions, according to this study that was released by the American Medical Association. The second study that they released came from the University of Kentucky and Emory University. It noted, quote, "Marijuana is one of the potential non-opioid alternatives that can relieve pain at a relatively lower risk of addiction and virtually no risk of overdose." And it continued by saying, quote, it has the potential to lower opioid prescribing for Medicaid enrollees, a high-risk population for chronic pain, opioid use disorder, and opioid overdose. Marijuana liberalization may serve as a component of a comprehensive package to tackle the opioid epidemic. Two studies. And then we're not talking about studies coming from UCLA or from Massachusetts or some liberal blue state. These are studies coming out of University of Georgia and University of Kentucky. Okay, so not exactly, you know, hotbeds of liberal activism there. These papers were released by the Journal of the American Medical Association's Internal Medicine Journal. And they find even furthermore that not just medical marijuana, but legalized recreational adult use marijuana goes even further in helping to reduce the opiate crisis. This is what they found. Quote, states with active dispensaries saw 3.742 million fewer daily doses filled. States with home cultivation only saw 1.792 million fewer filled daily doses. But state implementation of medical marijuana laws, while it was associated with a 5.88% lower rate of prescribing, adult use laws was associated with a 6.38% lower rate. And you want to know why? Because in an adult use state, you don't have to go to your doctor, collect all your medical records, go to a medical marijuana clinic, present them to a doctor who does an examination, who then writes a recommendation for you to use medical cannabis, which you then take to your state's Department of Health and fill out a bunch of forms and probably hand them over $20 or $50 or $100 or in Oregon, $200 for the privilege of being able to treat your pain with a non-addictive painkiller. But in an adult use state, you just walk in and show that you're over the age of 21. That's why you see lower opiate overdose risk. People in pain will take medicine to try to alleviate that pain. Give them the access to a non-addictive, non-toxic herb, and they will use it. And fortunately, there are some politicians who are starting to get this. In our next segment, we're going to talk about Democratic politicians who don't get it, Democratic politicians who are still lacking a spine. This next one is not one of them. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from the state of New York, who understands what's going on here in the conflict between opioid prescriptions and medical marijuana. Or as I like to say, we don't have a war on drugs, we have a war between drugs.
We have a lot of young people dying right now from opioids.
I don't see it as a gateway to opioids. What I see is the opioid industry and the drug companies that manufacture it, some of them in particular, are just trying to sell more drugs that addict patients and addict people across this country. And when we had a hearing on medical marijuana, the person that testified against it was from the opioid industry, because to them it's competition for chronic pain.
Absolutely correct, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. She is a co-sponsor of numerous marijuana acts, reform acts in the Senate. Cory Booker has been another great champion of medical cannabis legalization and so forth. We've got Jared Polis, my Congressman Earl Blumenauer. Back in the Senate, Rand Paul from Kentucky has always been had a libertarian view on the legalization of marijuana. So, Donald Trump, if you're really serious about this opioid overdose crisis and the need for us to try to get some non-addictive painkillers into the hands of the people that need them, you only need look west. You only need look at the West Coast states that have legalized. Look at the Northeastern states that have legalized. Look at the states now, 30 of them with medical cannabis laws, where we find lower rates of opiate prescribing, lower rates of opiate overdose. These two studies that have just come out are just the icing on the cake. We've got numerous papers, at least five, that have examined various aspects of the opiate crisis and the impact that marijuana has had on them. One has shown 25% fewer deaths associated in the medical marijuana states, associated with opiate overdose. We see fewer prescriptions. We see fewer people turning themselves in for any sort of opiate rehab, any sort of drug dependence that they've gotten. Fewer incidences of that going on. In every way, Marijuana helps to reduce the reliance on these highly addictive painkillers. So it's no surprise that the opiate industry is going to be the ones showing up to oppose any sort of reform of marijuana laws. They recognize what problem it creates for their bottom line. The poster child of this, of course, Insys Therapeutics in Arizona, the Phoenix-based company that makes a fentanyl spray that donated $500,000 to defeat marijuana legalization in the state of Arizona in 2016.
Come out and fight. It is a good day to die.
All right, that sound means it's 20 after, and that means 4:20 in the Mountain Time Zone, which I will be in on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, making my way to Boise, Idaho for Saturday's Boise Hemp Fest. I'll be the MC. I hope to see you there. Check it out at BoiseHempFest.com.
The Marijuana Agenda is a listener-supported independent podcast brought to you by Radical Russ Media, LLC. Subscribe to our VIP feed at MJAgenda.com for access to our ad-free podcast segment archive. Make a one-time donation to support the Marijuana Agenda at paypal.me/radicalruss. You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm astonished to hear people suggest we can solve our heroin crisis. Have you heard this? By having more marijuana.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
Now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Someone is smoking over there.
Something we cats would never do.
Filling their lungs with thick, dark air.
What a disgusting thing to do.
Cats have 9 lives with 8 to spare.
Humans have 1.
With none to barter.
Why do they smoke?
Why don't they care?
Humans are smart, but cats are smarter.
Listen to cats, you men and women. Take care of your lungs.
They're only human.
The American Lung Association, the Christmas Seal people.
This has been an actual anti-drug public service announcement. To combat this and other drug war hysteria, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific at live.mjagenda.com or download the free podcast at mjagenda.com.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I discovered that it didn't make any difference whether you smoked reefer in the white classmate's sparkling new van or in the dorm room with some brother you'd met down at the gym.
Learn more at mjagenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Marijuana has come a long way since President Richard Nixon signed the law declaring it a Schedule I drug. Since then, activists and lawmakers have been chipping away at prohibition at the state, local, and national level. Now, decriminalization, medical cannabis, and adult marijuana are realities throughout America. Join us as we learn more about how we're legalizing cannabis in this episode of Government at Work.
Well, today in Government at Work, we're taking a look at politicians across the United States, those with some national attention, and their opinions on the legalization of marijuana. And today we're particularly looking at the left side of the aisle. We're taking a look at the Democratic Party because I believe we are starting to see a very well-defined rift between older, more conservative, centrist Democrats and a younger, more progressive, more liberal sort of insurgency, if you will. Maybe a Tea Party for the left, if you will. And on one issue in particular, this is in stark relief, and that is the issue of marijuana legalization. If you look at the leadership of the Democratic Party, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, we've got a leadership bullpen there that is well into their 70s and 80s. You talk about people like Dianne Feinstein, for example, in their 80s, and it is starting to become quite obvious that there's a generation gap and the new generation of younger progressive Democrats need to take over the party. As an aside, if you've been watching Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, testifying before Congress and just having to wince at some of the noob type of questions you're getting from these 70 and 80 year olds that have no idea how Facebook works. I mean, we need new blood, a new generation. And with that in mind, I'm so excited about the candidacy of Cynthia Nixon. You know her from Sex and the City and other jobs she's had as an actress, a great actress as far as I'm concerned. But I'm really excited about her progressive policy positions for the state of New York and how strongly and effectively she's willing to articulate them. She recently, in a series of tweets, came out with her position on marijuana legalization, which she then pulled together as a short video that she released on her Twitter account, Cynthia Nixon's gubernatorial account. And I'll just play you the audio from this. It's a minute and a half. Just play you the audio because I wish every Democrat could speak about marijuana legalization so effectively.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Nixon. A lot of you have been asking about my position on marijuana. So here it is. I believe it's time for New York to follow the lead of eight other states and D.C. and legalize recreational marijuana. There are a lot of good reasons for legalizing marijuana, but for me it comes down to this. We have to stop putting people of color in jail for something that white people do with impunity. 80% of the New Yorkers who are arrested for marijuana are black or Latino, despite the fact that whites and people of color use marijuana at roughly the same rates. The consequences follow people for the rest of their lives, making it harder to get jobs or housing, and for non-citizens, putting them in the crosshairs for deportation. In addition to ending a key front in the racist war on drugs, regulating and taxing marijuana would generate hundreds of millions of dollars of tax revenue for our people and create important agricultural opportunities for our state. In 2018, in a blue state like New York, marijuana shouldn't even be an issue. If there was more political courage coming out of Albany, we would have done this already. The simple truth is, for white people, the use of marijuana has effectively been legal for a long time. Isn't it time we legalize it for everybody else?
That's Cynthia Nixon making the racial justice case for marijuana legalization that is such an easy case to make. It's surprising that we don't hear more Democrats speaking out against it. But I got to tell you, it sure is nice to hear a Nixon who is for legalization.
I think we've got to take a strong stand against legalization.
Yeah, that's old Tricky Dick, right? He wasn't so much for it. But this Cynthia Nixon, I never thought I'd live long enough to say I support Nixon's stand on marijuana. That is amazing. So I'm so happy that she has put this issue out there and how she led with the framing of we should follow the lead of eight other states. That needs to be emphasized every time we talk about this. This isn't new. This isn't something that needs study. This isn't something that just came out of thin air. This isn't some wild, harebrained idea. This is something with a 5-year track record of the sky not falling. And what's most impressive to me about this is Cynthia Nixon running a campaign against a well-established, entrenched Democratic incumbent, someone with national standing, Andrew Cuomo, the incumbent governor of New York. And he's one of these dinosaur Democrats who still doesn't recognize the reality of what's happened on the West Coast and Colorado recently, or what was it, January. In January, when he was asked about this issue, he said that, well, we just don't know yet. We need to study it.
I think we should fund DOH to do a study, let them work with the state police, other agencies, look at the health impact, the economic impact, the state of the law.
So this guy, we got to look and see what might happen. What might happen if we legalize? You can look at 5 other states and see what's happened since they've legalized. This is not new, but these spineless Democrats, these weak, wishy-washy, wimpy Dems who are afraid to be labeled as soft on drugs. This guy's still operating with the old Nixon mentality of amnesty, abortion, and AIDS. This guy's still on the idea that they're going to get painted as some sort of hippie liberal drug addicts. When we're way past that now. And good for Cynthia Nixon for attacking him in the primary. This is the way you got to take over the Democratic Party. It's not through third parties. It's not through vote tossing. It's through primarying these bastards. Learn the lesson from the Tea Party, man. Learn the lesson from what the Republicans did. You got to primary them from the left. You got to pull the party your way, not abandon it. But this has been a big campaign issue now in the state of New York. And just a couple days ago, Cuomo was out at some event, and since Nixon has brought up the issue, he's been forced to readdress it. He's got nothing new to say about it.
We are now in the midst of a study on what the consequences would be. As you know, it's complicated and it's controversial.
Controversial. Who is it controversial to?
But in the past, you've had reservations because you thought it was a gateway drug.
I have not supported legalizing marijuana. The situation is changing. I said, let's do a study.
Let's do a study. Let's study it. Let's see what might happen. In the meantime, we'll continue locking people up, disproportionately black and brown people, because we still need to study it. The jury is still out on this. And nowhere is the jury more out on this than in New York City itself. The mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, was recently on the Breakfast Club radio show where he and his wife were asked about this. Now, his wife, she's African-American. She actually supports legalization, although she supports it with strict regulation. De Blasio, though, He can't make that strong stand.
I'm not there yet for several reasons. The thing I'm saying is we know now, beginning to know something about what it looks like to legalize in our society, because some states have done it.
In Denver, Vegas.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get a sense of what that has meant for them. Is that meant?
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it means a lot of money, exactly. You want to know what has happened, what has meant for the states of Colorado and Washington? Their teen use rates didn't go up any. They made hundreds of millions of dollars. They saw far few people dying from opiate overdoses. They've seen no real increase in traffic fatalities or deaths. They've seen people still going to work. They've seen kids still going to school. The sky hasn't fallen. What more could we need to study about this? But to guys like de Blasio, we got to understand that underneath this exterior, there's what fuels a lot of this is a disdain for the cannabis consumer. It's a cannabigotry. It's a those people problem. And this was on display when de Blasio earlier this year, this was in February or January, I think, was speaking to a Politico podcast, I think it was, and laughing about the marijuana legalization issue as if it's some, you know, no big deal left-wing fringe thing.
I think it's reached a normal level in the sense of what we were trying to achieve. We said we would end arrests for possession of small amounts of marijuana. The only way you get arrested if you have 25 grams or less of marijuana is if there's something else going on.
So there's a, you know, there's something else. Nobody really gets arrested. It's that same thing again.
So would I like to see the number go down? Sure, I'd like to see the number go down. But that would involve people not committing the original offense to begin with.
If you want to see fewer marijuana arrests in New York City, well, you got to stop smoking pot. Hey, Mayor de Blasio, how about legalizing it? You know how many arrests for marijuana smoking we have in Portland, Oregon? None. None. So this is not limited to just New York State, and it's not limited just to generations. But let's take a look at some of the big time Democrats out there and their stand. We've got Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, this is her in the debates for president.
I do support the use of medical marijuana. And I think even there, we need to do a lot more research so that we know exactly how we're going to help people for whom medical marijuana provides relief.
She can't even come out forcefully to support medical marijuana. She's got to play the we need more study game for medical marijuana, something we've had for 20 years as of the 2016 debates. Joe Biden, of course, the architect of the drug war in many respects, as his time in his time as a senator, is, of course, no better on the issue.
Well, there's a difference between sending this to jail for a few ounces and legalizing. The crime, the punishment should fit the crime, but I think legalization is a mistake. I still believe it's a gateway drug. I've spent a lot of my life as chairman of the Judiciary Committee dealing with this. I think it'd be a mistake to legalize.
It'd be a mistake to legalize. Yeah, so that's Joe Biden. That's someone who's been floated as being a 2020 candidate, perhaps, maybe, for the Democratic Party, come and rescue the party, supposedly, who still, in 2017, I think that clip is from, couldn't get his head around the legalization of marijuana, still clinging to that old gateway drug theory that was debunked in 1999, that is debunked every time Michael Phelps won a gold medal, is debunked by Richard Branson founding being a billionaire founder of multiple corporations, is debunked daily by cannabis consumers like you and me, who work and study and parent and live and breathe and thrive despite the fact that we like to smoke the dope. And of course, it's not just generational. You might say, well, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, they're, you know, in their 70s, you know, what do they know about the weed? One of the rising stars of the party is Joe Kennedy III. Now, this guy, he's the grandson of Robert Kennedy, the grandnephew of JFK. He's a ginger. He's from Massachusetts. He's currently a congressman from Massachusetts. Joe Kennedy III appeared on Jimmy Kimmel's show recently, and they discussed the issue of marijuana legalization. Of course, Kimmel held his feet to the fire better than most of the guys like on Meet the Press or any of these political talk shows. They get held their feet to the fire on the marijuana issue more by a comedian who ran the Man Show, for God's sake, than our real journalists. But this was Joe Kennedy III hemming and hawing about marijuana legalization.
Part of the impact of when you're talking about the law is to make sure that you get the border cases right. And I do have concerns about what an increased availability of legal marijuana means for adolescents, what it means for folks that are struggle with addiction.
So I always thought it was stupid when they said, we worry what legal marijuana will do for access for kids. Like, number one, kids have access already. Like, 80% of them, since 1975, Monitoring the Future survey has been asking these kids, how easy do you think you can get marijuana? 80% of them, give or take a point or two, for 40-odd years now, have said it's pretty easy to get weed. So how is making a store that has a secured entrance where someone is checking their ID, and in the case of Oregon, 100% of the time, how is that going to increase their access? Legalization doesn't change a damn thing about weed for kids. It changes everything about weed for adults. But this guy, he just doesn't get it. And the concern of what does it mean for people who are suffering from addictions? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that we determine the rights and choices of free individuals based on the worst case scenarios of people with diseases. Like, we need to make Snickers bars illegal because some kids have peanut allergies. Is that where we're going in this country? Going to nerf everything for everybody? Oh, no. Someone who's struggling with addiction problems might walk by a dispensary where they're currently not allowed to smoke inside of them, so there'll be no smell, and they're required to have opaque windows, so they won't be able to see anything that's going on in there, and all of the products are sold in opaque packaging that are usually enclosed in opaque bags, so the customers leaving the dispensary won't be able to see the weed there. We shouldn't have legal dispensaries, legal pot shops, because they might make the choice to walk into one of them. You might as well ban donut shops now to help cure my obesity. But this Joe Kennedy, man.
Are you also against alcohol? Because it seems like those very same things apply.
So I don't drink. Uh-huh. But obviously it's okay that everybody else does. And I think...
Wait. Obviously it's okay that everybody else drinks. This is the big disconnect that I... It comes right to the core of why I stand for marijuana legalization. The idea that we live in a society, not just the United States of America, but most of the Western world, the non-Muslim world, that is awash in alcohol. The alcohol is so intricately weaved into every bit of our culture, to the point where the president can have beer summits, to the point where there's toasts for people's weddings, there are wakes for people's funerals, where alcohol is part and parcel of just about everything we do. And we think that's just okay. Even though we know it contributes to 58,000 alcohol-related deaths, and it contributes to so much of domestic abuse, and it's about 40% of the calls that the cops have to deal with, someone dealing with alcohol, the wrecks, the violence, the puking, the cirrhosis of the liver, the cancers, we accept it all. Obviously. We obviously are allowed to drink, and to accept that is fine. I've grown up in that culture. You've grown up in that culture. Most people drink just fine. But to set the standard that we're going to have open and free access to as much alcohol as you want at damn near any place you want to go, and not curb that because we know X percent of people are alcoholics and Y percent of damage will happen. But then to apply that standard to the least harmful recreational substance out there is pure, galling, utter hypocrisy. It's separate but equal. It's anything but. And it's a complete insult to the rights of us cannabis consumers to be treated as equals with our beer-drinking friends. If you've given them the mulligan on all the damage that their drug causes when it's used irresponsibly, you cannot hold us to a different standard. You cannot hold us to that double standard. It makes no sense whatsoever.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
Health Cannabinoid, your ACMPR experts. Consultation services for medical cannabis. Visit healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. That's www.healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. Health Cannabinoid.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Uh-oh. That's just what they'll be expecting us to do.
Learn more at MJAgenda.com. After 5 years of legal marijuana in Colorado and Washington, both states have shown no increase in teen use of marijuana and decreases in marijuana DUI arrests, while generating tens of thousands of jobs and hundreds of millions in tax revenue. Legalization is no longer theory. It's a proven public policy benefit. Tell your elected officials,
It's time to end adult marijuana prohibition.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is brought to you by Cannabis Kamikaze, a professional licensed producer from Canada producing 3 pounds per light. Follow Cannabis Kamikaze on Twitter at Cannabis Kamikaze. That's at Cannabis, K-A-M-I-K-A-Z. Cannabis Kamikaze.
Total war against public enemy number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill. That was
the point. I think we'd be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Good people don't smoke marijuana.
Well, everybody in the cannabis sphere is heating up over the news of former Speaker of the House John Boehner joining the board of this Acreage Holdings. This is a company that owns 35 marijuana licenses in 11 states, including here in Oregon. And this is notable, of course, because he was a longtime drug warrior. Of course, now there's money to be made. How convenient. He's had an epiphany. Yep. In an interview, he said, quote, "Over the last 10 or 15 years, the American people's attitudes have changed dramatically. I find myself in that same position." End quote. 10 to 15 years, people's attitudes have changed dramatically. Well, actually, Mr. Boehner, you were Speaker of the House from 2011 to 2015. You held those views at least through 2015. So it seems like your position hasn't changed in the past 10 or 15 years. It's like the past two or three. What's different now in the past two or three years? Well, I'm sure I'll think of it. He also released a tweet on his @SpeakerBoehner account. Interesting that I guess he can still call himself Speaker. He could get that title for life, I guess. It's kind of like we still call President Carter, President Carter, right? All right. So his tweet says, "I'm joining the board of Acreage Holdings because my thinking on cannabis has evolved. I'm convinced descheduling the drug is needed so we can do research, help our veterans, and reverse the opioid epidemic ravaging our communities." Now, descheduling, folks, that's farther to the left than most Democrats even go on this. Descheduling means taking it out of the Controlled Substances Act altogether, like alcohol, like tobacco, like no prescription, no doctors, no federal concern over it whatsoever. And it would be a matter wholly for the states to deal with. He even made a mention of that with the 10th Amendment being states' rights. It was either him or Governor Weld that also is joining this board. How convenient, how wonderful they've come around to their position now. Just joining in another set, another one of these leaders joining the club of people who've come around on marijuana after they're out of government, after they're no longer in a position to change the law on it. So descheduling is something that Speaker Boehner is for now. In 2011, then Congressman Barney Frank proposed H.R. 2306, the Ending Federal Marijuana Prohibition Act of 2011. As Speaker of the House, John Boehner made sure that bill went nowhere. And a constituent sent Boehner a complaint about that, and he forwarded his response to Normal. I was working at Normal at the time. I remember this whole incident going down. And Boehner explained why he was adamantly opposed to the legalization of marijuana. He says, quote, "As you know, the Food and Drug Administration has classified marijuana, together with heroin, LSD, methamphetamines, hashish, and a number of other drugs as Schedule I drugs." By the way, methamphetamine is not a Schedule I, it's a Schedule II. You can actually get a prescription for it. It's called Desoxin or Adderall. "According to the FDA, these drugs carry a high potential for dangerous abuse. To date, no clinical study of marijuana has progressed to the level required for approval by the FDA. Even more, the Department of Justice has reiterated its intent to enforce the Controlled Substances Act in states who have legalized marijuana for medicinal purposes. I am unalterably opposed to the legalization of marijuana or any other FDA Schedule I drug. I remain concerned that legalization will result in increased abuse of all varieties of drugs, including alcohol. Okay, so first of all, this unalterably apparently is alterable, but this concern about the increased abuse of drugs and alcohol has not been shown to have occurred. We've seen that the abuse of drugs, at least among the kids, among the teens, is at the lowest recorded rates ever. And the use of alcohol among adults is at some of the lowest recorded use rates ever. Maybe that helped him come around and have this epiphany, right? So as this has gone through the cannabis sphere, you know, the media, the pundits, and the cannabis smokers ourselves, this has brought up some feelings. And it's interesting how we're falling on two sides of a divide. Either the I'm glad he's come around, forget about the past kind of thing, and the other side of cannabis carpetbaggers, of people who were in the business of putting us away, who are now in the business of profiting from us. So which side do you fall on this? Because it's interesting. I've gotten some responses on this. It's because one of the problems, of course, is the racial justice issue of this. And Boehner having this epiphany and evolving to join this board to make money off of selling marijuana. He's suddenly woke about mass incarceration. This guy who believed that, quote, marijuana use in its raw form is harmful, end quote, is now suddenly woke about mass incarceration. Boehner continued by saying, quote, when you look at the number of people in our state and federal penitentiaries who are there for possession of small amounts of cannabis, you begin to really scratch your head, Boehner said. We have literally filled up our jails with people who are nonviolent and frankly do not belong there, end quote. It's also notable how he's gotten the talking point about saying cannabis and not marijuana, which he said all the time back when he was Speaker of the House. Who is this we that filled up our jails? Who's this we? This is the problem I've got, is it's this mistakes were made, passive voice framing of it, of Boehner not apologizing, not standing up and saying, hey, I was part of a drug war that was wrong. I broke up families. Not it broke up families. We filled up jails. No. You did. You did. You were the leader of the House. You stymied efforts to change these laws. You used the power of your position to get on television and radio and the internet to tell people how awful marijuana was and it should never be legalized, unalterably. As a writer out at Quartz noted, before taking on the job of growing, distributing, and retailing marijuana, Boehner was Speaker of the House. During this time, from 2011 to 2015, 420,000 people were arrested in the U.S. for marijuana sales and trafficking. Sales and trafficking, exactly what he's going to be a part of now. 420,000 people are owed an apology. And I don't know who coined the term cannabis carpetbagger, but thank you. You know, as people who were previously in the business of busting us, who are now getting in the business of profiting from us, this is not just a United States thing. John Boehner is not the first drug warrior to be a cannabis carpetbagger, someone to change his stripes for profit. Mark and Jody Emery have been railing against this same phenomenon in Canada that's been going on. You know, Canada is going to have federal legalization, nationwide legalization this summer. And as they've been going about it, they've been pushing away all the people like them who've been in the underground dispensary business for years. And all the sweetheart deals are going to all these politically connected cronies. And even some of them, cops, actual provincial cops, who were like the in charge of narcotics units, who were getting taxpayer money to go bust people for weed, are now getting these licenses. And Jody Emery, she told the Guardian newspaper, quote, it's a mix of hypocrisy and pure profiteering. They made a living off tax dollars for trying to keep people out of the cannabis business, and now they're going to position themselves to cash in, end quote. So, again, does it matter if someone was a drug warrior in their past, if they're supporting ending the drug war now? Politics makes strange bedfellows, right? Don't don't look a gift horse in the mouth. You got to take your allies as you can get them, right? That's one side of this debate. That's one side of this debate. And Tommy Chong, you can't question his bona fides in marijuana. He's actually cashing in on the marijuana business now, too. He's got the Chong's Choice and so forth. But of course, Tommy Chong should cash in. Everybody supports Tommy Chong cashing in. My God, he went to prison for 9 months under laws that John Boehner supported. So if anybody should have an opinion on this, you'd think it'd be Tommy Chong. He actually got in touch with me via Twitter today, and his response was, quote, "Hey, don't dwell in the past. You got on board now, and that's all that counts. Welcome on board, John. We need more like you." And that's a legitimate view, I think. A lot of people have this practical political view that, hey, John Boehner on our side's a win. Forget about the past, right? And Tom Angel, who, you know, with the Marijuana Moment and Marijuana Majority, you know, big source of the news for this show, he tweeted out, "John Boehner is more progressive on marijuana than Bill de Blasio, Andrew Cuomo, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, the majority of Democratic governors and members of Congress. Do better, Democrats." Kind of inspired my last segment. But he's absolutely right. No matter how he got to this issue, and even if he's doing it just out of just craven greed, he's more right on this issue than the leading Democrats are at this point by supporting descheduling. And Tommy Chong kind of notes this as well in another response to me. He says, "Politicians say whatever to keep their jobs. The law that had me incarcerated was written by Biden. It's the nature of the job. Pot won because pot is good. No blame." And it's true. There is a bipartisan nature to the war on drugs, although it's more bi on the Republican side. There were certainly Democrats who were instrumental in the war on drugs as well. I would say, though, the difference is that Joe Biden isn't hopping onto the board of an 11-state cannabis company. Joe Biden isn't trying to enrich himself without apologizing to 420,000 cannabis consumers that he helped to imprison. I mean, look, I'm not saying that that John Boehner's wrong now. I'm just saying he's not our friend. He's our ally. Understand the difference? Not our friend. He's our ally. I doubt he's ever smoked pot. And he's not doing this out of some sort of epiphany on racial justice or mass incarceration or fixing the opioid overdose crisis. These are talking points he's been fed. This is about, hey, there's money to be made here. That's what's going on. And Boehner, coming from tobacco land, knows all about, you know, making some money on some agricultural drugs. For me, it's not whether someone was a drug warrior in their past. It's whether they acknowledge that they were. Whether or not they're expecting us to just turn a blind eye to the carnage they caused and welcome them in with open arms. Maybe it's just, you know, call it my Lieutenant Aldo Rain Inglorious Bastards approach to cannabis carpetbaggers. I want to give them something they can't take off. I'm glad Boehner's finally on the right side. Finally on the right side, though. It would be better if he came to the light out of virtue rather than greed. If he'd have made these pronouncements about mass incarceration or the opioid crisis or helping our veterans independently of joining some corporate board that's going to make money, well, then they'd land with some more moral weight. But for him to mouth these platitudes in conjunction with joining a board to make money without so much as a, "I'm sorry I helped lock y'all up," shrouding his drug war leadership in this "mistakes were made" passive voice, makes his evolution kind of ring hollow to me. And, you know, it's up to consumers to decide where they fall on this issue. And we can vote with our dollars. Here in the state of Oregon, Acreage Holdings is running dispensaries called Cannabliss. You don't have to shop there if you don't want former drug warriors to get rich off your cannabis consumption. The brand Dixie Elixirs and Dixie Edibles is also run by this holding company. Out of Colorado, I know they've got a significant footprint there. You don't have to drink Dixie Elixirs. You don't have to eat Dixie Edibles if you don't want your cannabis consumption money profiting someone who ardently worked to lock you up for years and years and years. You can go onto their website at acreageholdings.com and you can take a look at all of the locations. They've got half the dispensary locations in Maine. They've got, one out of four of them in Connecticut. A few of the others out there on the East Coast. You can look up and see which places are Acreage Holdings, and you can decide not to spend your money where someone who was third in line to the presidency kept fighting to lock you up.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Tune in for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio, available to our VIP patrons at MJAgenda.com. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers!
Hey!